Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's a new Ace of Base documentary out, and it can be seen in certain territories in the world, not all. I'll be showing you some excerpts of that documentary and an interview with the documentary filmmaker, Jens von Lies.
I used to bump into them on set TV in Sweden, and I used to think, what's going on with this band? It's they're a little bit odd. They're not from Stockholm. They're not very cool. People in Sweden didn't like them. What is it about them that people don't like? And why are they so loved outside of Sweden, but not in Sweden? It's a kind of a dark story sometimes as well. And a lot of people that has worked with them, I could tell. Sometimes they could tell me more stuff than they actually did, because more weird things happen. But I just thought that there's so many weird things already. And I think he was pretty honest that he did a lot of stupid things back in the day. This wasn't their only chance in life, but for Ulf, this was his only chance. Jonas, he said very early on that he wanted it only to be a music documentary, but I thought it would be nicer if we could tell the whole story. I mean, it was a German fan that broke into the Berggren family home in Gothenburg, and Jenny woke up in the middle of the night with a knife to her throat. When this happened, this was not what they had wanted or asked for, or what they thought could ever happen, but it happened. The whole thing just erupted and became so big so fast. So it's everyone lost control of the project, really. There, you can tell that they haven't talked to each other in a way that they need to for a real comeback.
Don't go away, the interview's coming up. Just time for me to ask you to please subscribe to this channel. It helps me and it allows you to hear when I've posted a new interview.
Jonas and I, we used to talk quite often until just a few years ago. I see Jenny maybe once a year in Gothenburg because her daughter has contact with my daughter, so we don't have much contact, but she actually called me on my birthday last year, so it was nice. I haven't seen Malin for a very long time. Her, I really would like to see, to meet and see how she's doing.
But why don't you just pick up the phone and call her?
It's not easy to call Molly. Maybe this project will unite us again, who knows? I mean, it was without them, I wouldn't be alive today. So of course, I have them to thank for everything. I love them.
Hello, America. I'm Joker from Ace of Base.
Hello, everybody. I am Min.
Cha, I'm Buddha.
And I'm the fourth member of Ace of Base. Jenny. Hi.
Germany would go number one. Holland, number one. France, number one.
Ulf Ekberg har sympatier med extremhögern.
The weirdest stories happen.
One night, a German woman went into my house and attacked me and my family.
This doesn't quite fit together.
I guess my interest for everything was lost there.
The whole thing erupted, and I don't think any of us were ready for that.
It's like a big snowball. Snowball getting bigger the whole time. I have no clue how big the snowball is.
Documentary filmmaker Jens von Riss, welcome. Where do I find you right this moment?
Well, I'm actually just outside of Stockholm, where I live. I've been living here for the last 30 years or something. I grew up in the south of Sweden, but I moved to Stockholm to work with ZTV, which was like a Swedish copy of MTV, where I first saw you back in the day, actually, Steve. So it's all thanks to you that I'm sitting here right now.
all the horrors of your youth are coming back. Yeah, I mean, you made a move from working for ZTV, and obviously there you would have made features and small features, and then you move on to making documentaries. What do you have to be able to approach a documentary? You've just made this Ace of Base documentary, so maybe we can take that as an example. How do you approach making something like that?
Well, I think it's because of what you said, that I've been doing smaller pieces before, new stuff, and so I think it's all about sort of trying to do something where you can work with a piece for a longer period of time, basically. And I think it comes with age, I guess, that you want to stay around with a subject for a little longer time. So I guess it was an obvious move to go from news related footage to actually trying to figure out what really did happen to this band. And that was what happened with the Ace of Base for me, because I used to bump into them on ZTV in Sweden, and I used to think of what's going on with this band. It's they're a little bit odd. They're not from Stockholm. They're not very cool. People in Sweden didn't like them and still don't like them, actually, to be honest with you. So I just wanted to know what was going on with this band. And in Sweden, we talk about ABBA all the time, but I'm a little bit tired of ABBA, to be honest with you. And I just thought, why not dig into Ace of Base? Because they've sold so many records, but they never get any awards from Swedish, exports, awards and stuff like that. So I was just a little bit curious about what is it about them that people don't like, and why are they so loved outside of Sweden but not in Sweden? And that was the basic sort of thought that I had coming into this project, really.
So how did you approach it? Did you approach at first a member of the band before you approached a TV channel? How did you actually get the finance together and get to a point where you could start this documentary?
Yeah, that's a brilliant question. In this case, it started with me bumping into Ulf Ekberg in Stockholm. He told me he had a lot of footage from the 90s just lying around at home. And I just thought, why don't you do anything with this footage? Because you have it. And we started discussing this, and he sent me the footage, and I, started to go through it, and I just thought that this is a good 90s, it's a time document from the 90s, basically. And I just thought, I start from there, and we see what happens. And then a streamer called Viaplay, which is a Swedish streamer, saw the potential in it, so we got financed from them. And I work for a production company in Stockholm called Nexico. So we started, dealing with Ulf and dealing with Viaplay and dealing with, the rest of the members of the band. And it was more difficult than I thought that it should be, actually. It was kind of a long process.
Maybe I can just ask you about that, because
yeah,
Ulf is supplying the footage. And I just wondered then, how much power do you have to tell the story you want? And how much power does someone like Ulf have, who supplies the footage? And from the documentary, which is a great documentary, I really enjoyed it, but from the documentary, you have the feeling that he was the motor of this band in many ways, and had a lot of the power in pushing the band forward. So whether it was a vehicle for him, or a vehicle for the group, or for your perspective on what you wanted to achieve?
Well, I mean, it's a good question, because it was kind of a fight to Jenny Berggren is obviously in the documentary. So I really felt that I needed her, at least, I mean, to be honest, to get some perspective from the Berggren family. And that was important. So it took a little bit of time to get her on board, because I felt that she needed to know that I was in it for the right reasons. And I'm from the music. I'm a music journalist first and foremost. I didn't go into this project for any other reasons than I thought it was a good story that hadn't been told like this before. So it took some time to get her on board. And obviously, Ulf is, as you say, he's a brilliant producer. You know, he's a brilliant sort of, he gets things going. So he's sort of, he pushed me and he pushed himself. And he's good at talking, obviously, and he's good at doing stuff, and he's good at promoting Ace of Base, doing new remixes and getting stuff out there. That's what he does, besides of being a businessman today. So obviously, Ulf was the guy, you know, behind, you know, pushing it a little bit, I guess. And for me, it was good to have him, because he pushed me as well. I mean, doing those stories, sometimes you feel that you would love to have some more creativity, sort of getting some more space of your own. And I now found out that it's a kind of a dark story sometimes as well. And a lot of people that has worked with them, I could tell sometimes they could tell me more stuff than they actually did, because more weird things happen. But I just thought that there's so many weird things already in this project. So maybe I can't get all of the stories, but I've got a few of them, and they're pretty good and they're pretty interesting. So that's, I guess, how I deal with it. I did my best, and I couldn't do more than what I have done, I think. But you could always get more, of course. You know what I mean. You can always dream for more, of course.
I mean, you mentioned, it's a weird story. I mean, it is a really weird story. I think what makes it also weirder is because they were a mainstream pop act who had massive, massive success in America. And then these weird stories that come along with the band, it makes it even weirder in a way. So let's talk about those and how you got through those. One of the stories that came out about Ulf later on was his inverted commas Nazi affiliation, in terms that he had flirted with the extreme right in terms of music that he made as a teenager, and so on and so forth, and the lyrics he wrote back then. How certain can you be when you talk to someone, you're always hearing their truth rather than the truth? So in terms of when you're talking to Ulf about that, how did you feel his responses were accurate? And did you do any research to back up that accuracy?
Well, yeah, I talked to a lot of his friends back in the day, back at the time when he was in those gangs. And I think he was pretty honest that he was he did a lot of stupid things back in the day. What I, though, could say through the process is that I really believe that he was really a kid. I mean, I've got a 15-year-old at home. He was around that age himself. And I can just watch my kid today when he gets home. He's a nice kid, but he's really lost in a way. So I think Ulf was lost, totally lost. And he also, he didn't have any relation at all to his father. And I really believe in that. And I think that he was searching for a father figure out there. And it's easy, you know, I grew up in a small Swedish city myself. It's easy to get lost if you don't have like a football team that you sort of, you know, you join a football club, or if you're into music or whatever, it's easy to get lost. So back in the 80s, it was kind of there was a lot of right wing movements in Sweden, to be honest. And it was a weird time. So I, to be honest, I think he was an asshole for a few years. I think I really believe he was an asshole. But as long as he's honest with that he was that, I don't think that. I think he was. He was a bad. So he just was was a bad spiral for him, you know, going on. And he was lucky to get out of it. And I think that's why he pushed Ace of Base so hard as well, because he got a second chance. And when he felt, okay, this is my chance, he could work for how much as, you know, possible, really, because life sort of just turned around for him. So why not work as hard as possible? So that's why I think he had problems with the other members in the band, which came from another background. They didn't feel that they had to do this for, this wasn't their only chance in life, but for Ulf, this was his only chance, I believe. And he turned it into something great. So I have to give him credit for that. But it's obviously always hard to tell those stories, because I know what you mean. It's like, and I didn't want it to be the only thing in the documentary either. It's a part of Ace of Base's story, but it's not the whole story. It's just a little fragment of it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And also I agree about that. I mean, you know, we live in an era where sins of the childhood can't be forgiven, but they were of the childhood, you know what I mean? And I think when you get older, you realize that we all make mistakes in life. You know, as long as you rectify them at some point, then it's okay, which is what I give him credit for.
Yeah, I think the cancel culture has gone a little bit too far. For my personal opinion, I mean, it's like you can't do anything wrong at the moment, and then you're sort of out, you're totally canceled. And maybe that's not, you can't live a life like that. No one is perfect. And I mean, Ulf is certainly not perfect, but I think he's come to terms with what he did bad. And I think he tries to do some good. I mean, I'm not 100% sure what he does for the rainforest, for example, but he tries to do stuff. And I mean, there we could discuss how much of a thing that is in, but at least he tries. And that's all you can ask of someone, I suppose.
Before we get on to the story, the main part of the story, I just want to talk about the other weird thing, because it is the most weird thing with this crazed fan later on going into the girl's household. And so first of all, tell me what happened, and tell me about how that impacted the end of the lineup, the original lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it was a German fan that broke into the Berggren family home in Gothenburg, and it was really early on in their career. I think they might have been a little bit naive. They didn't lock the door at the time in the house, and someone got in, and Jenny woke up in, you know, in the middle of the night with a knife to her throat. So obviously that scared the shit out of them, and they had to get a lot of security. And what people say in the documentary, and what I believe might be true, is that Malin was the one who got most affected of it, the sister of Jenny, and because she didn't want to be living that sort of lifestyle from the very beginning. So when this happened, this was not what they had wanted or asked for, or what they thought could ever happen, but it happened. So it was kind of a letdown for everyone, and they had to have a lot of bodyguards, you know, traveling with them. And I think a lot of the fun aspect already at that time sort of disappeared. So already like a year or two into the career, the fun aspect sort of disappeared, I think. And I think it got to a point where it was all more about business. We have to bring all of these guards with us. We don't have the same. We don't have our private life, you know, as we used to have. So it was a weird time for everyone, I think.
Also, what I found very interesting is the friendship between Jonas and Ulf. that clearly at the start they were corroborating very closely and not only working together but having what seemed like an incredibly close friendship. And at one point that had ended. And what's fascinating about the documentary is you bring that sort of full circle in a way and bring them back together. How difficult was that? And how did you see that arc yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult because Jonas, he said very early on that he wanted it only to be a music documentary, but I thought it would be nicer if we could tell the whole story. So I think he was a bit uncertain of how he should deal with that. But in the end, he turns up in the documentary. And I was really surprised that he did, because I didn't really think that he should. Why now, sort of a thing? Why do you turn up now? But he wanted to be there and accept this award that they got. And it was really weird. And to be honest with you, it's been, I could tell through talking to a lot of people as well. I talked to all of the mega record people and all of the people in the States that work with them. And they're not really the average band. They didn't have the same goal, all of them. I think the whole thing just erupted and became so big so fast. So everyone lost control of the project, really. And to this very day, I think they have a different opinions about what happened, really. And it's a bit of a shame that Jonas didn't want to be in there more than he is. But you have to respect that also, I guess. He's living his life and he's doing his thing. Ulf and Jonas, I think they really had something going on for a few years, but you could tell listening to Ace of Base as well that even on the second album, it wasn't the same magic. So they lost the magic when they became so big, I think. There was too much money, there was too much pressure. They wanted to, you know, to use big studios, the better equipment and better, you know, bass players or whatever, but they lost that feeling that being like a demo band, working in a little garage, they lost, you know, that spark that they had when they came out. They just lost it because all of a sudden Clive Davis wanted something, all of a sudden someone else wanted something, and it just became a big political discussion. And I think Ulf and Jonas, they also lost control, I think, over it, which is not so strange in a way, I guess, because they became rich, they became, you know, household, they became whatever, you know, in just a year's time, everything changed.
You mentioned the drive of Ulf, and, you know, maybe that came from, you know, this event in his childhood that he wanted to make good, but he definitely has this immense, you know, I don't know if overpowering is the word, but you really notice with him when you meet him and talk to him that he has this immense drive and power going on inside of him. And you have the feeling, well, it's probably more than a feeling in the documentary, the others are also have a bit of the feeling that they were in the shadow of Ulf. Do you feel that's correct?
Mm. Yeah, in a way, I think so. You're right in a way. And I also think that they all want their own narrative in a way. So I think that they want to get their story across. And sometimes I think they forget that it's not so super interesting with every little detail. And Ulf doesn't really care about that. I think he just wants to overall tell a story, which is good. And sometimes maybe he says a little bit too much sometimes, but on the other hand, it's showbiz. And I think that he realizes that. And I think that maybe the other members sometimes get stuck in, you know, issues that are not too interesting outside of their bubble, I would say. But that's just my opinion. And that's how I think it is. And I think Ulf is a good salesperson, to be honest with you. I think he could sell whatever to anyone, you know. He could sell my, you know, my oven to someone without a problem. So, I mean, you have to credit him for that as well. So I think he would have been a great, you know, marketing person somewhere or whatever, you know, but he has the skills for it.
I mean, one thing that surprised me about the documentary was obviously this footage that you got from Ulf, which is a lot of early footage of the band, even in their sort of pre-incarnation, as it were. And you really get the feeling that they were very engaged in the music. And I know that sounds weird, but in a sense, because of their image later, it's sort of that image later has detracted from where they originally came. And that was something that that came back for me. Ah, they were into this.
Yeah, and that for me was one of the, what I found interesting as well, when I saw the footage of, they were called Tech Noir from the very beginning. And actually the clips of Tech Noir is really kind of a cool, undergroundish sort of band from Gothenburg, you know, in a discotheque in Gothenburg. And you realize that this is like, you know, pre-snap sort of like the whole era of Euro disco before, but it's also like some Italo disco in there, and there's kind of nice, you know, elements of, you know, house music and stuff like that. And I think that's cool that it came across, because I think that, you know, Jonas really had that. And I think Ulf, and I believe Ulf was a good A&R person in a way as well. I think he could tell that we could package this in some other way and it could fly. So that is what I think happened. They had something going on, and obviously they found Dennis Pop later on, a few years later. And when they found Dennis Pop, everything just came together, you know, just, you know, the pieces, you know, when the puzzle became correct in a way. So that's what I think happened.
I mean, I remember talking to Ulf, and he mentioned that when he was young, he was, I think he'd been to see Kraftwerk in when they came to Sweden, in probably Malmo or near Gothenburg at least, and also Depeche Mode. And at that point, when he was telling me that, it was difficult for me to put those two things completely together. But seeing your documentary allowed me to see, I can see now what he was saying by that, because there were elements in Tech Noir. So that was fascinating for me.
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of Ace of Base, why they became a little bit cheesy, is they made kind of a few crappy music videos, we must say. I mean, I don't know why they didn't let good directors, you know, just do some cool videos with them or whatever. They made some bad moves. And I think that's why people, you know, that's why they're sort of a guilty pleasure sort of band for a lot of people, because they wanted to stay in the middle of the road at some points. And a lot of it is visuals, I think. And a lot of it is like, you know, they didn't want to go to left field, and maybe they should have trusted people a little bit more back in the day. I don't know, and let people with good ideas, you know, let them try them. You know what I mean? So they became this sort of in the middle of the road sort of band in a way.
Yeah, you know that. You know, when we tell stories of the past, we often incorporate little bits of other people's stories into our past. It's just something that the human does. And it's not lying. It's just something that happens. When I talked to Ulf, he talked about going to Stockholm and getting this recording contract and sleeping in a car. And then giving the record executive, I can't remember who it was, but giving someone a tape, and it played endlessly in their car because it got stuck. When I talked to Raz, of Rob and Raz, he told the same story about him.
Yeah.
And that's a point where I thought, are both of these true? Are either of them true? Which one? What's a good story?
Yeah.
And what's the truth? It's clear that he was driven and that he really wanted to get a recording contract and really went for it. How have you deciphered between truth and truth?
Well, that's a really good question. No, but I've heard the story from the Dennis Pop camp so many times about the tape, so I think that's a true story. But thinking back on the 90s, when both you and me worked for music TV stations, I believe a lot of stories, though, at the time were fabricated, I think, but at the time you didn't have any time to double check facts, really. So maybe there is some, maybe it's over exaggerated a little bit with the tape, but But Dennis Popp himself has said in a lot of interviews that that was what happened. And he the tape got stuck in his car stereo and he couldn't get it out. And it's something funny about the story. Even if it's not true, it's good anyway. So yeah. I think it's okay if they put a little bit of, you know, salty on it.
No, I think everyone right. does. Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone does. So I don't, yeah. you know, I don't detract from that at all. What role or what was Dennis Popp a key element in their success and why?
Yeah, I think it was because if you listen to the demo of All That She Wants, it's called Mr. Ace. It's actually pretty good, but it's more of a Tyler, the Creator sort of song today. That's what Wyclef Jean himself said about the song. It sounds so it's a little bit all over the place. But what Dennis Popp did, he took away a lot of the, you know, the elements that weren't too good in it. Ulf's rap was one of the things that he took away, actually. So he just simplified the song. Which made it a little bit more sort of like a two pop song. It's easy to listen to and with a strong chorus and I mean he didn't only do that with Ace of Base. He did the same thing with Leila Kay and Backstreet Boys, and so he obviously had a good pop ear and he was really into production. And I mean at the Sharon Studio they had the best equipment, they had the best sound, they had. They found there was a lot of reggae grooves to it, and they just found a good pop groove in there. And Dennis Popp for sure played. I think without Dennis Popp, it wouldn't have happened. You know, so he played a massive role. And someone might say something else, but that's my opinion. At least I think he was really, really super important.
More coming up, but just time for me to remind you to subscribe. It helps me and it allows you to find out when I've posted a new interview on this channel. Okay, let's get back to Ace of Base and the documentary filmmaker, Jens von Reis.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Obviously, he brought in Max Martin to the Sharon Studio, and obviously he thought that he had something going on. So he was looking for talent, and he knew who to pick up. Really, he knew who to bring on. So I mean, without Dennis Popp, no, we wouldn't have a lot of the big hits today, I think.
One of the interesting points in the documentary I felt was when they go to Top of the Pops. And they're staying in a cheap hotel to start with, and they go back and then, no, just because it really signified this trajectory that was like from here to here in 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? And that
in two weeks time, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I thought that was a good representation of how it must have been for all of them. Do you know individually how each one of them dealt with that trajectory?
Well, I just believe, as from what we talked about earlier on, I think that Ulf was more ready for it in a way because he had nothing to lose. I mean, he had nothing to lose. He could only win things. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think that the Berggren family maybe they weren't really sort of prepared for it in the same way. I think that Ulf in a way he had nothing to lose. I think the Berggren family. They could start study something or they could do something else. They came from this family with you know the father being a doctor in Gothenburg and they had a little bit more of security, I think, you know, and the girls, and also it comes across in the documentary that the girls didn't believe in the project from the very beginning themselves. They even say that, Jenny. So in a way, I think that Ulf had a manager sort of role at the time. And without him pushing so hard, it wouldn't have happened. So you have to credit Ulf for that as well. So I think, yeah, that's my opinion. But also you have to give Jonas credit for being a really brilliant songwriter as well. I mean, without him writing those chords and those, I mean, the first few songs, it wouldn't have happened either. So they brought something to the table, all of them. But I think, I mean, if you go to the States, I mean, that's not enough. You need to have even more than that. So maybe they didn't have it to make it for like a second album in the States. They didn't have the power for it, really.
You started and made a comparison to ABBA, because ABBA were, I don't think they are today, but they were very disliked in Sweden at a certain period. And you mentioned that Ace of Base have been long disliked in Sweden and not being given, you know, the sort of, not just the credibility, but being given the accolades that they should have been given just because of their success. How have they suffered as people who live in Sweden when they're living in a country where they know that they're not liked? Because that must be really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's a bit weird for them, but I think also in a way their story is a story of them not making it in Sweden from the very beginning, because they didn't get a rock, you know, they couldn't get a record deal in Stockholm. So when I talk to Ulf about it, it's like it's the story that's the only story he knows about. So for them being more accepted abroad is that's the only thing they know. And I think a little bit of it has to do with, at the time when they came out, they weren't as the coolest band on earth. In Stockholm at the time, you had to be, you hang around with the right people and have the right clothes and so all of that. And as Caio says in the documentary, you know, big city kids, they could tell when someone is from out of town, and they were out of town. And you were also in the documentary, Stephen. You say that there's something in the suburbs, right? So you could tell that they had some suburban feel about them, I think. And it still doesn't come across in Sweden. We still don't sort of... there's something lacking. I don't know what it is, but they're not 100% accepted today, actually. So either... it's weird.
Also, timing is always important in any success. And of course, you know, when I was at MTV, they came up during the grunge era as well. So that you've got this, and it wasn't as big selling, but you've got this cool grunge, which will stay forever, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam or whatever. And then on the other side, you've got this absolute mainstream pop. So there was a sort of split there, which also probably worked against them. What elements surprised you in the documentary in those terms?
Well, I guess I was a little bit surprised that when they came to the States, they were looked upon as an alternative band, actually. They were on the alternative charts for a little while. All That You Want was played on alternative radio. That I didn't have any idea about that at all. But I think as far as when you talk about timing, I think they came in at a certain point when, you know, Mary J. Blige was being played all the time. You know, you had a few good pop songs around Aaliyah and those sorts of R&B acts at the time. But there weren't that many pop hits at that point, especially not in the States. So I think that's why it worked in the States, because they were looking for big pop songs. As Richard Swartz is saying in the documentary, the A&R man at Arista. So that's what I think is the key thing. That for them, I think timing was perfect, actually, especially with the States, because there was too much hardcore rap going on. There was too much grunge at that period. So a band like Ace of Base with cheesy lyrics and but good poop, you know, good hooks could work anyway, you know. So yeah, I guess it surprised me a little bit with the alternative way there, in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, that's interesting that you say that, because also with grunge, the counterpoint were the boy bands, in a sense, that came up at that point, particularly in Europe. This documentary, you know, and that watching it all in one go, it was what I loved was this arc to it, that you really started to understand their story and what a personal story it is. And in a sense, you know, like the best films are always have this sort of happy, tragic ending.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like the lovers come together, but one dies. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
And in a sense, this is that story. It's a film, isn't it? It's not, you know, I'm documentary is a film, but it's a film in a classical sense as well.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess being a bit pretentious maybe, but I guess I tried to get into the bubble. What happened inside of their bubble, you know, and how do they reflect on it now, like 30 years afterwards? And I think at some points, I think it's interesting with Jenny when she talks about her sister and how they helped each other out, you know, when they were at the height of the success. And also, I mean, it's kind of interesting when Ulf is going to Monaco to World Music Awards and he's talking about how hard it is with the press, but he loves the press also. So it's kind of that double-edged sword all the time. He says something and he does the opposite. So it's kind of, but it's interesting how they dealt with it in different ways, I guess, with fame especially. And I guess, you of course, with money as well, I guess it's, it plays a big role in people's lives. And I think a lot of bands, they don't think about what actually will happen if we make it big. And how do we deal with it? And how do we split our income? I mean, it fucks up a lot of bands. So, I think Ace of Base is one of those cases where it did also, because it wasn't maybe the best split that they had, I think.
I mean, you set this up at the beginning, and you know, it's almost like Ulf going on this journey to meet them again, or you know, who he could meet again, at least.
Exactly.
Obviously, he achieves that goal of meeting Jenny and meeting Jonas. The deeper goal, which I don't know, it's a supposition, and I would imagine that would have been in his head, is to have some form of reunion. It's like the dream. Yeah. The dream of ABBA on stage again. The dream, you know,
exactly.
Maybe the avatar as Ace of Base, I don't know.
Yeah,
but in
exactly.
essence, that. Did you have a feeling from him that was what he wanted to achieve? And how do you feel that it's left him, this documentary?
I think a bit of both. I think in a way, it's going to be tough for them to reunite. But I think also in a way, I think he and Jenny starting to talking again a little bit now. They're doing press for the documentary. And they were out last night in Stockholm, went to a premiere of a movie. And so I think in a way, it actually got them together, even though they didn't maybe, they weren't all of them looking for that. I think Ulf might have been looking for it. Because Jenny's doing her thing, but I also think that she would be much better project with them reuniting, obviously. So I think Ulf was looking for that. Maybe I think for a little while it felt a little bit dark and it felt like it will never happen. But now I'm not so sure anymore. I think maybe there is some, you know, there's a little spark here that might take off, but I don't think it's going to take off now, but maybe like in a few years' times, if they would have, you know, if they would do something in Las Vegas for 2 weeks or something like that, or, you know, in one place, I don't think there will be a world tour, but they might do something. I think it's possible, but I also think that it's going to take some more time because there's you can tell that they haven't talked to each other in a way that they need to for a real comeback, for sure. But maybe now they feel that there is still a lot of people that wants to know about them and wants to hear them again. And there is a nostalgia scene going on. There is, you know, the 90s is here all the time. So it's back again. And so we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see.
What was the reaction then at the premiere?
Well, to be honest with you, we haven't had a real premiere yet. We're gonna show the episodes in a couple of weeks in Stockholm. The thing is that Jenny is out playing her, doing her concerts, and Ulf is traveling quite a lot as well. So we were talking about doing something, but we hadn't had a chance to really get a date for that yet. But I think we'll see what happens. I mean, it'll be nice to do something in Germany or in France or like somewhere we know we could do something good about it and bring in a lot of DJs and doing remixes. And but we haven't really had the chance yet to do something like that. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if the documentary will fly around a little bit. We might get some more chances. But one of the bigger issues for me doing the documentary, to be honest, was that the Viaplay, who the streamer, has had a lot of problems during this period of time. Now they're doing fine again, but they had a lot of financial problems. So doing a big launch was never wasn't realistic, to be honest. But let's hope that I think they're starting to do good again. They've got some new partners and stuff like that going on. So, but they're for a while it wasn't sure that they would be around today, actually. So.
So where is it being shown, and where is it going to be shown?
It's going to be shown on Viaplay in Sweden, which is one of the biggest streamers in Sweden, and they will show it in Denmark, Finland, Iceland. It's actually being shown right now in Australia, CBS it's called, and it's going to be in Greece in a few weeks' time, and it's going to be and there's talks about some more countries. I'm not too sure because I'm not dealing with that, but it's Denmark, obviously a big country for them as well. It's going to be, I think, on the Danish public service channel there, the big one, and it would be nice to get it out, obviously, in the UK or and Germany, of course, and I know that they're discussing things at the moment, so we'll see what happens. But for the moment, Sweden is the bigger thing now. It's coming out in the 1st of May, so I have no idea how it will be received at all. It might be a total, bummer. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it will be received as the story. Whether it will change people's minds is a different question always, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's certainly a really good and valuable documentary. And documentaries like this can resurrect.
Yeah, exactly. Bands. Yeah, exactly. So exactly. Yeah. So let's hope it's going to be around for a little while and let's see what happens. I mean, I've been working with this for quite a long time, and I've been working in the music in showbiz for many years, and one thing today is you never know really with what will happen. And we went to Israel, for example, filming in this documentary, and look what happened there. So I mean, who knows? I mean, the world today is so strange, so anything can happen. I mean, from day to day. So I just hope we we get it out here first in Sweden, and it's going to fly around a little bit, and we'll see what happens. So we take it from there. And I think it's a good thing not to go into a project with too many sort of unrealistic dreams. I think it's good to start here, and if it flies, it flies. But you'll never know with showbiz. It's the same with music. You never know what you can have a good song, but you have to get it out there as well. So you know what I mean.
So who have you got your eyes on next?
To be honest with you, I'm doing a Swedish documentary at the moment for Swedish television with a local Swedish band called Dina Ögon, which is a completely different story. Okay. I can send you a link. It's really a nice little project, and I've got some, working in the 90s as we did, the both of us, we started out. You you tend to go back there. So I have a few more ideas actually of going back in time, and I found some interesting footage making this documentary. So we'll see what happens. I have some ideas. I needed a little break, I think, from Ace of Base because it drained me out totally, to be honest with you, because there were so many weird things going on behind the scenes that was really hard to deal with. So I was just a little bit tired, and I still think I am, but I'm just happy we got the project done, basically, that it's that we got a project. It's there, but it was a long process, and it was hard in many ways. So I'm pretty happy that I've gotten this far in my life. I survived, sort of thing. So that's nice.
Well, congratulations. I mean, it really is worth seeing, and I did really enjoy it. So Jens von Riss, thanks very much.
And thank you, monsieur.
Yeah, I will see you in the next documentary about the night.
Yeah, of course. I'll give you a call. I'll give you a ring quite soon, Steve. Then let's hook up for a beer in Germany soon.
Up there is an interview I recommend. Down there is where you can find all the podcast interviews. And here is where you can connect.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.